Thanks for tuning in, and welcome to the August 5th, 2019 edition of IMRU Radio Magazine.
The world's longest-running lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex radio show, and proudly promoting our allies.
I'm Abby Dees.
And I'm Wendell Jones.
Tonight, we visit our friend Miss Barbecue, holding court for Drag Queen Story Hour.
And as we count down to our 45th anniversary celebration next month, we revisit two of our own favorite stories.
First, from 10 years ago this month, we follow Steve Pride to a piano bar happy hour for a chat with Kids in the Hall barstool regular Buddy Cole.
And now that we're in the thick of growing season, we'll discuss the difference between the juicy fruits growing in your garden and...
But first, the honest tea.
Because it's so difficult to keep up with the news. Last week, we talked about Poland, and at that time, portions of Poland had declared themselves free of LGBT ideology, which means we're not sure what. And then a conservative magazine had started issuing stickers that you could put up in your place of business saying that this was an LGBT-free zone, which harkened back, so unfortunately, to the Jew-free zone pre-World War II.
Yeah, and, I know a little bit about that.
So that was bad. So it turned out that a court struck down those signs.
So there is some hope in Poland.
Good news. But Bialystok, which is not just a character in The Producers, but a small and apparently very conservative town in Poland, held its first Pride parade. And while there were hundreds of participants in the Pride portion of the parade, there were thousands of participants in the shouting it down portion of the parade.
Yeah, the organizers knew they'd be met with resistance because this is very much the issue that people are talking about right now. They did not expect the level of violence and threats and intimidation. A witness said that the protesters blocked her way, first hurling insults at her, then bricks and stones and fireworks.
Bricks are serious.
Yeah, bricks are serious. From balconies, people were throwing eggs and rotten vegetables. The most aggressive people were, unfortunately, the usual characters in these things. Football hooligans.
They seem to be all over Europe.
Yeah. The most frightening groups of people I have ever been around have been football hooligans.
Yeah.
Which we don't have a lot in the U.S.
We do not.
I hope that doesn't come with the rise of soccer interest in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Football hooligans. Yeah. Yeah. I hope not. Anyway. But people with families, people with kids, elderly people were joining in. There's tons of viral video about this.
Yeah.
And this has really shocked Poland. It is very much what people are talking about in Poland right now, even people who didn't feel that they had a dog in the fight.
Right, because apparently thousands of people turned out in Warsaw to protest the protest in Bialystok, and I believe other larger cities too this happened
as
well.
Yeah, although Warsaw really is unique in being a very pro-LGBTQ city with a gay mayor. Krakow, where I'm going to be going, is actually apparently quite conservative, and you have to be on the down low. And yeah, but a 14-year-old boy was beaten up. There's video of a mob of men attacking him. Dozens have been arrested.
Right.
Dozens are in the hospital. People in Poland are comparing it to the Charlottesville killing.
Although nobody's saying there are honorable people on both sides, at least.
Thank heavens. Why did this happen? Why? It's because the right-wing party that's in power right now,
and elections are coming up,
their hobgoblins have been spewing this propaganda. And like it or not, words create a mob mentality. Again, Poland has some history with this. They know about this. So it's the Law and Justice Party. They are the new right-wing party.
Those names are so inoffensive and vague.
Yeah. But as soon as you
see,
but
it doesn't
say
family. That's usually the tip-off.
It's usually.
Law, or Justice, and Family.
They might as well just call themselves the Law and Order Party, which means not. The leader of that party at a recent campaign that was staged to look like a family picnic said that people had a duty to defend the nation from, quote, Western decadence. That's us. We're Western decadence.
I hate to think this is decadence.
There is so little I can think of in my life that's decadent anymore, except my acid-free decaf coffee that I'm letting myself have in the morning.
Well, you can go show them when you travel there in the fall.
I will. A Warsaw group called Stop Pedophilia has been driving around the country telling stories of horror and abuse at the hands of the gays, which, of course, as we know, is not backed up by any data.
No.
That same group set up a tent in the center of Bialystok for weeks before the event, handing out flyers and things. And then after the march and the rioting, they drove a truck around the city broadcasting anti-queer messages on their loudspeakers.
It's not as if we haven't gone through this here before, because every time an election rolls around, somebody's got to be the boogeyman. And remember before marriage equality, it was gay marriage. It would get trotted out the way that the immigrants on the border were trotted out this last midterm election. Yeah. They get trotted out, be afraid, be afraid, be very afraid, and then it's dropped.
Human nature. It's depressing me.
Why don't we ever learn?
We don't learn.
I have to just look across the ocean or look at yourself.
And the Catholic Church has to be named in this.
They do. They do. Their Archbishop Voija.
Well done.
And he said that pride events are blasphemy against God.
And interesting about that, because he started using a Latin phrase that is, okay, thinking back to my seventh grade Latin, non Possumus or possumus?
You had Latin fancy.
I did. Amo amas amat.
Man.
But that translates to, we cannot accept this. That sounds sort of anodyne. Mm-hmm. But that was the rallying cry that priests used to fight communist oppression. So once again, we are being lumped with the communists in a really weird way.
Right.
Now, of course, violence has been condemned by the church and by officials who have completely denied responsibility for any of this. And they say, no. You know, just free speech and values and blah, blah, blah. All violence is unacceptable. Then they're still doubling down on the anti-queer rhetoric.
And it's just when you create that atmosphere where it's okay to be violent, people will almost always rise to the bait.
Unfortunately. And I will be there. However, I am now festooned with rainbow swag. Mm-hmm. I got my bracelets in the mail. I got my bandana, my rainbow cycling socks. I am showing up in Poland in my rainbow gear. My partner and my mother are very worried.
And you're not just going to be in Warsaw. You're going to be in places where this actually could be an issue.
Yeah, Lublin is one of the cities that said they are free of LGBTQ ideology. Guess what? In September, they will not be.
It will be served up on a fancy platter for your delectation.
But
Poland.
I will be careful. It's just important to me. I don't want to just be a tourist and ignore this stuff. Okay. I want to represent and connect with my people.
Be careful. Don't become a news story.
I will try.
All right. Okay. Good news.
A little bit.
When was the last time we said that? In North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper has issued an executive order forbidding the use of taxpayer funds to be used for conversion therapy.
And this makes North Carolina the first southern state to have any statewide policy against conversion therapy.
Right. Now, it is just taxpayer funds. So if you have a church privately funding it, and you know there are, that is not what we're dealing with. We're not flat out denying conversion therapy.
No.
But this is a step in the right direction.
You do not have the governmental stamp of approval on that.
Exactly.
And you actually could make the First Amendment argument that so much of the conversion therapy is religious-based. Mm-hmm. Government money shouldn't be going to that, just regardless of the fact that it's been totally discredited as a therapy.
Yeah, I really didn't know any government money was going toward it.
Anything's possible right now.
Oh.
It should be noted, however, that this is an executive order. This is not a legislative action.
Right.
And that's getting pushback right now. I just can't help but notice that they always complain about executive overreach when the executive is a Democrat.
Oh, always.
In which case, Roy Cooper is a Democrat.
Yeah.
Apparently, when the executive is a Republican, say by the name of Trump, executive overreach is not a thing. That's just good leadership in making America great again.
It is. I was surprised, though, by the polling numbers. 80% of the population in North Carolina, 80% of the poll population in North Carolina supports the ending of conversion therapy. And that seemed like an awfully high number for North Carolina to me.
It does seem a little high to me. But, you know, North Carolina is an interesting place. They have incredible movement, progressive kind of groundswell. They always have. So their fights around this stuff have always been really loud.
Yeah.
Because they do have a lot of people that are figuring it out and progressive minded.
Well, they have Asheville and then Charlotte's a big university town. And, you know, it's like every place else in the country. There are little blue islands no matter where you go.
Yeah.
You can find them.
And they elected this guy for governor.
That's true.
Just barely, but they elected him. So good
barely,
for you, North
but fairly.
Carolina.
And further news comes from, of all states, Utah.
Yeah.
They have a surrogacy law that forbid it for same-sex couples, because the way the law was originally written, it said that you could only use a surrogate if the, quote, intended mother, end quote, was unable to bear children. And it was decided that because with two men you don't have a mother, then they could not gain access to surrogacy in the state of Utah.
But that's and all changed.
Chief Justice Matthew Durant has overturned that and said that same-sex couples must be afforded all the benefits the state has linked to marriage and freely grants the opposite-sex couples.
Gee.
I know.
A rational appellate opinion.
I know.
It's been a long time. But Utah.
Of all places.
But again, you have to just look beneath the surface. There are people fighting everywhere. We kind of forget that because it just seems so
but you think that something so big,
stuff?
But something so big and so life-changing and so important in, granted, the world of the well-to-do same-sex couple can hinge on something as small as the word intended mother.
Yeah. Well done, Utah.
Thank you.
Again, I'm not going to make assumptions anymore. Well, I'm going to try not to. No. Actually, I make assumptions all the time, but I'm going to try to be better about it.
And now let's leap into the world of celebrity-attached stories. Mario Lopez.
Okay, not that I really care about Mario Lopez. I had to actually Google, like, what does he do? He's a professional host, as near as I can tell.
He played Greg Louganis in the made-for-TV movie.
Oh, that's right.
And I think he was the killer gay in one of the TV movie versions of the Gianni Versace murder.
Oh,
I think. I'm not absolutely sure about that one.
Well, anyway.
But he had a period playing pretty gay men.
Yeah, I see it.
I know.
No, he's pretty.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a June interview on the Candace Owens show, and I had to go look up Candace Owens. She is a conservative commentator.
With Prager University.
Which I guess is a conservative place.
There's
what
a whole world
I
of conservative things,
yeah,
things
I
out there.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't keep up.
This was unearthed, even though this happened in June. This sort of exploded on Twitter, that he said that parents who allow their children to live according to their self-identified genders are setting a dangerous example.
And apparently the trigger was a story about Charlize Theron's child, who at the age of 3 announced, "I am not a boy." And Charlize said, "Well,
great.
Let's just go with that. Fine, cool.
Yeah.
I'm down with that." So Mario did soon thereafter apologize, but that did not stop people like Donald Trump Jr. from jumping in anyway and saying, "Good for you, Mario. You're right."
Yeah, don't let the outrage mob silence you. And boy, they are good at naming things. We are the outrage mob.
Yeah.
I'm not outraged. I'm tired.
Decadent.
No, I'm
outraged mob.
Actually, I'm outraged. And decadent.
We're busy.
He said, "I literally can't see anything wrong with what Mario Lopez said that would cause the outrage mob to try to destroy him. He was as reasonable and accepting as anyone could be, but because he may have had doubts about letting a 3-year-old, he uses the same capitalization that his father does, that's random, make a permanent decision, he's killed." So here's another thing, too. Suddenly this is about, you know, the image they're creating here is parents are taking their 3-year-olds in for full surgery and big shot of tea.
Right.
I don't think this is happening.
No, and then D.L. Hewley jumped in on it?
Yeah. He said, "If you're 3-year-old, your ass ain't making the rules in my house." Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And I'm also very uncomfortable with this my house, my rules thing, because this is what's getting queer people kicked out onto the streets at 15. And
yeah, because we're not talking about serving ice cream for dinner 5 times a week because your child wants it. We're talking about a child being allowed to explore the fluidity of their identity, which a 3-year-old doesn't have a pretty firm handle on any sort of identity.
What are the implications? So your 3-year-old, you thought boy, is now saying, "I want to be a girl." Come on, what are the implications of letting her explore that and feel that and feel good about herself?
Right.
Again, not a big shot of tea or, you know,
and it's sort of like
estrogen.
The way when people come out against gay people, all non-binary people, and they seem to have put a great deal of thought into what everybody's doing in bed.
Yeah.
And then they want to bring that up too. And this almost sounds like these adults are trying to sexualize what this child is saying when what the child is merely saying is, I want to explore my identity. Because kids, you know, they're just surrounded by little boys and little girls and that's all they know.
And
maybe it's about dresses, maybe it's about the hair, maybe it's about the way they conduct themselves. I mean, I was a little sissy boy and boy, people tried to crush that down. I mean, had I been allowed to explore that and people left me alone, how different my life might have been.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't allowed in my generation.
You'd certainly know the feeling of being accepted for your parents and being valued as you're trying to figure out who you are and what you're about.
Right. And that's all these people were talking about.
Yeah. And then this. But I think that reflects what a lot of people are thinking. So back up, people. I think letting kids be kids means letting them explore and creating a safe structure for them to do that within. And that's the honest tea.
Janis Joplin immortalized, coming up now on The Rainbow Minute. Raised in Port Arthur, Texas, Janis Joplin is described as the best white blues singer in American musical history and the greatest female singer of rock and roll. Joplin sang the blues with authenticity, since she had felt so rejected by her high school and college classmates that she fled to the all-welcoming shores of San Francisco. She last visited Port Arthur during her heyday in 1970, just 2 months before her death of an accidental drug overdose. In death, the acceptance Joplin craved from her hometown was finally hers. In 1988, 5,000 people in Port Arthur sang her song, Me and Bobby McGee, with tears in their eyes, as a bust of Janis Joplin was unveiled. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Gene Pembleton.
I was born this way, hey, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way, hey.
Welcome back, I'm Abby Dees.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
So last Saturday morning, Wenzel and I found ourselves at the Eagle Rock Public Library,
along with a few dozen rambunctious children,
to see a dear old friend.
Hi, everyone. We are so excited to all make it to Drag Queen Story Hour. It's our fabulous queen today, the legendary Miss Barbecue.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, everybody. You guys ready to hear some stories?
Yay!
Yes! I'm so excited. We have some beautiful, beautiful stories here today. Not all princesses wear pink. Mary had a little glam.
Okay. I like that one.
And then we're going to have a choice. We either can do neither.
Neither!
Or it's okay to be different.
Okay, neither.
Some princesses roll around wrestling on the muddy ground, then get right up to skip and dance in tattered, stained, and muddy pants.
What? And dogs?
I know. And a sparkly crown.
And sparkly crown.
Who likes pumpkins?
Yeah.
Pumpkins are cool.
My name is Pickle. I'm the LA organizer for Drag Queen Story Hour.
Some princesses like to pedal wearing lots of shiny metal.
Drag Queen Story Hour is actually available in all LA public libraries. We're in the special programming list, so libraries can request. We go to a lot of libraries throughout the LA County area. Eagle Rock is our first LA public library that we have done more than two or three, and it's definitely like we're more regular here. But we are available at all the LA public libraries. We go to Watts. Yesterday we were in the West Valley. So like it's all around, but we have a very special home here at Eagle Rock, and it's a lot of fun.
I like this one because she's a chocolate girl.
She's chocolate.
Mary?
My name is Caitlin Quinn. I am the children's librarian here at the Eagle Rock Library.
Why do you think this was a good fit for your library?
Eagle Rock is a place where there's quite a large queer community. So for one, I think that families appreciate seeing their culture here performed and celebrated.
Yeah. One of the reasons I love bringing the program to Eagle Rock is because the community is so vibrant and the turnout is always really high, and it's a diverse group of people that come that are just ready for the program, and the community is so appreciative of it, and that kind of support I think really helps the program do what it's supposed to do, which is promote reading, and it's a literacy program.
Once upon a time, there were two kinds, this and that, these and those, one or the other. But I'm different from everyone here. I'm neither red, nor orange, nor yellow, nor blue. Exactly.
The stories are also about inclusion, which is not the norm with most story hours. How do you find all of these books?
I look out for these books, and more are coming out all the time. Books that celebrate not only LGBTQ families, but gender inclusivity, fashion as play, diversity, being different. It's a wonderful time for children's literature. I can hardly keep up with all of the titles that just keep coming out. We keep an ongoing list. Please grab one before you leave.
What are the kinds of things that you're hearing when people leave here?
Thank you. We love you.
I was born and raised in LA, so it's my favorite city in the world, and it's so amazing to see that it has such a special home for this kind of programming, which again is a literacy program, and the books that we do read are very much about inclusion and celebrating who you are. And as I always say, the core values of being a drag queen, love, acceptance, self-expression, are values that we want to instill in our kids. So, you know, our agenda is more reading, more love, more sparkle.
All are welcome.
Have you gotten any sort of pushback?
We get pushback from the same people that push back on Harry Potter because it's about witches. I'm just going to be honest about that. There are, of course, always going to be resistance to programming like this, but as far as our branch goes, I wouldn't say that it's anything worth commenting on.
This is the land of all, and everyone fits here.
My name is Monica Valencia. I'm with the Los Angeles Public Library. I work in the PR department, so I'm a spokesperson. You know, today was a wonderful event with parents and children celebrating diversity and acceptance. It was a lot of fun. It was a story time. And here at the LA Public Library, we welcome everyone. And we welcome the parents who bring their children here and their decision to decide on what programs they want for their kids too. It is one of the many programs that we have here at the LA Public Library that reflects the diversity of our communities.
Barbecue.
Hi, cutie.
What's your name?
Nice to meet you.
Hi, I'm Ms. Barbecue, aka MJ Brown.
Okay, so why are you doing this?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is visibility. How can we be more visible? And how do we promote more acceptance? And I think it does start with the children. The more we talk to kids about differences and coming from different backgrounds and being proud of who we are, the more that will trickle into how they operate throughout their lives.
When I think of brand barbecue, I do not think of children.
You know?
How did you make that leap?
I was talking to Joe earlier and he said, not all queens are cut out for this. Not all queens are able to sit down, read to children, engage with parents. You know, they're used to the club scene and stuff. So there is a certain finesse that we have to do. And I've worked with children before. I was a recreation leader for 4 years in college. So it was fun to come back and see and talk to kids. Because kids are blunt. If they like something, they'll like it. If they don't like it, they don't like it.
Is there anything different, or is this just basically an extension of anything else you do?
It is theatrical, but I think there's a certain aspect to it when it comes to children and what really seeps into their consciousness, which is different from other places because you are dealing with young minds and being able to engage with them immediately when it happens. As soon as they say, well, they can't have two dads, and then we sit down and discuss why right then and there. So it's not just glossed over. And some of the books I resonate with more, and some of them I'm like, oh, I don't know about this one. But books with a message, I never came across children's books that have such strong messages with them. You know, usually it was about, here's a pig, here's a farm, here's a cow. This one's like going deeper into it, but still making it entertaining and engaging the parents as well. Because I don't think it's all about the children. I think it's about the parents, too.
So you look in this room, and there are a lot of, obviously, queer parents or queer-positive families. But, of course, there are other families around, too, that could really benefit from that. Are you meeting those families?
It's interesting, because when I walked out and they announced me, I saw a couple of guys and women in the room who were like, uh-oh. And automatically, my defense goes up, and I go, you know what? They're here, which means they're open. And they're here, let me try to reach them. So when I'm out there, underneath my tone, I try to have, it's okay. Your children are safe. It's okay. Learn something different. It's okay. We're here with you.
Why did I feel like Mary Had a Little Glam was written by you?
I love that book. I love Mary Had a Little Glam. Wasn't that great? I came across that one and I was like, I must read this book. I have to read this book. I will read this book to the children.
And how are the kids responding? Like, who are they as an audience?
It's interesting to see how kids warm up to you and how some of them, this is their first exposure. First exposure to maybe a person of color, first exposure to a drag queen, first exposure to being in a room full of kids. I mean, you add those layers to that, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. So I try to smile more. I try not to just go for a kid and grab them. Come here, kid. Come here. Like, you have to kind of go, here we go. I'm not going to bite. And I noticed parents like to show the glitter stuff. That usually brings the girls in, and little boys, too. I've had little boys run up and go, I want that ring. I'm like, I bet you do, kid.
All right. We're going to close out with this one, okay? It's okay to be different. It's okay to have big ears. It's okay to have wheels. Yes, it is. It's okay to be small, medium, large, or extra large. That's right. It's okay to wear glasses. Yeah.
That was really big.
It's okay to come in last because you finished it. It's okay to dance by yourself.
What?
Yeah, you can.
Why is that?
I dance by myself all the time.
Why?
It's okay to be proud of yourself.
What?
Who's proud of themselves?
Me.
Yeah, everyone's hand should be up. Everyone's hand up. Everyone's proud of themselves. Yes. It's okay to do something nice for someone. Absolutely, like helping me with my book. Thank you.
People want to find out about it, where do they go?
You can go to the website, dragqueenstoryhour.org. You can email la@dragqueenstoryhour.org. Or I would really encourage people to go to their local library and see what's up and ask about it.
Librarians rock.
You are special and important just because of being who you are. The end. Amazing people, and I'm Miss Barbecue.
Dare we say it, Miss Barbecue is a natural with kids.
I'd send my kids to her classroom if I had kids.
And a note, Drag Queen Story Hour at Eagle Rock is co-sponsored by two local realtors, a couple by the name of Allison and Jason Huddy of Home Sweet Huddy.
So a shout out to local allies like Allison and Jason Huddy. We need you now more than ever.
And back to one of our favorite stories. It has been 10 years this month since Steve Pride talked to Kids in the Hall alum Scott Thompson as gay barfly Buddy Cole, but it's no less relevant, confusing, and funny.
But to put some references in context, his other guest that day was queer bodybuilder Bob Paris, who was a bit Marianne Williamson for Buddy's gin-fueled sensibility.
Excuse me, are you Buddy Cole?
Yes, I am. You look so familiar to me. Have we slept together?
No.
You're certain?
Positive.
Because you just seem to be so familiar. Maybe we slept together and it was so terrible you forgot all about it?
No.
No, that's completely impossible. You're right. Anyways.
Can I ask you a few questions?
Yes, you may. Ask away.
Buddy?
Yes.
May I call you Buddy?
Yes, you may. Everybody calls me Buddy.
Your book is divided into sections, much like a grapefruit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start at the beginning. The very best place to start.
Yes.
You come from simple people?
Very simple people. Simple peasant people that instilled in me very good values from the very word go. Actually, from the word, qu'est-ce que c'est? Allez? Allez, allez.
Tell me about your childhood.
My childhood was idyllic, really. I never had a... I didn't really have a difficult coming out process. I was always gay the moment I was born. And my parents, I think, had so many children. I had 23 brothers and sisters that I think, and I was a baby. And by the time that I came along, they were just too exhausted to really worry too much about me. So I was just left on my own to just wander in the forest and choreograph dances with animals. So, and I was very lucky that I was a rural child. I mean, obviously, to look at me, you'd think that I was hatched from a Fabergé egg or something fabulous. But I am a child of poor pig farmers.
You had a lot of brothers?
Yes, I did. I think I have 9 brothers.
Were you close to them?
Some, closer than others. Others, less close.
Close enough to wrestle?
Yes, my brother and Eve and I were championship wrestlers. Well, not that we were ever graded or ever participated, but in our minds, our wrestling matches were all championship wrestling matches, yes. I don't know what you're alluding to, but... Let's just say that we were a very large family and there weren't that many bedrooms and nights got cold.
Why did you leave the pig farm?
Well, I had to leave because my mother died and I had won the prettiest feet in Quebec contest the year before. And I don't know if you know the history of Quebec, but in Quebec, feet are a huge issue next to language issues. And I was just born with these beautiful feet, and I won this contest that turned me into an overnight sensation.
And you had your own TV show, wow.
Yes, I did, MASH. Not to be confused with the original MASH, but we called it MASH because we just figured that would make people tune in, and then by the time they tuned in, they'd be too lazy to tune out.
What do you look for in a man?
What do I look for in a man? Jesus. Of course I was going to say a pulse, but that's been said many times before. Basically, I'm looking for a good man right now. I mean, he doesn't have to be the most gorgeous. He doesn't have to be the youngest. He doesn't have to have the biggest brain. But he just has to be good to me. I have a bodyguard fantasy, you know what I mean? I want to just leap off the stage into the arms of a big brawny bodyguard who just sweeps me away to an... Did you know that islands are all connected under the water? Did you know that? Yes, it's true. I was talking to Bob Paris recently, and he lives on an island. And he was telling me that underneath the water, islands are all connected. And I didn't know what he meant, so I just stared at him until he left, because you just can't handle that kind of profundity so early in the morning. They're connected. Yeah. We're all connected, right? So I think that's what he was probably getting at. Mm-hmm. What was that? You made a little face.
Sorry,
a big face.
Speaking of the year 2000.
Yes. Are you working about the YK bug?
No, it's you were amazing as the time gate operator in the film Millennium.
Oh, you have done your homework, haven't you?
One of my favorite films. So how did you get the role, and is Cheryl Ladd a great actress or what?
She is an incredible actress. Do you know, this is, because acting is all about concentration. This woman was so concentrated that she spent an entire week standing beside me and never once looked over to the left. I mean, that takes concentration. And even when the cameras rolled, she still kept her face and head completely stationary and her eyes looking somewhere into middle distance. You know, that place where Oscar dwells. And I realized later that she was watching her little daughter and nanny off camera to make sure nothing untoward was happening. Did you know that Lindsay Wagner breastfeeds her 8-year-old boy? I just thought I would throw that in. I just discovered that recently, you know.
You had some very special stepchildren.
Yes. Oh, God, I miss Suzanne and Plachette. Of course, you're referring to my two-headed stepdaughter. Just lovely girls. Well, one of the heads was. I preferred Suzanne, that was the head on the left, because Plachette, she had a lot of attitude. And I think the reason that Plachette had such attitude is because she was on the right side, but she was left-handed. So she just had this enormous anger that burned within her. And I understand that anger because Bob Paris was telling me that every morning he wakes up and he thinks to himself, I'm queer. And I thought to myself, there we go, that's exactly, try that. No, I mean, seriously, will you try that? I'm a little scattered because when you talk to someone like Bob Paris, your mind is just filled with intellectual ideas and just things that you never thought you would think about, like the letter A. Just like that, he said to me as he was leaving, he goes, think about the letter A, really think about it. And I have. It's not just about being first or an A-frame. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I know that I'm not really answering your question, but I'm just having a wonderful time promenading through my head. A, just think of it, the letter A, just think about it. Islands, connected, the letter A, identical bodybuilder lovers. It's a brave new world we live in, isn't it?
What do you want the reader to take away from this book?
Well, I want the reader to take away, basically, the idea that nothing in life is insurmountable, that it's all about survival, and that it's very important to name things. Because as you see in the book, when I have that lovely affair with the boy that breaks my heart, I never find his name out, and it leads to terrible tragedy. And I think that that's pretty much the message of the book, is to name everything, whether it's the coffee cup that you drink out of, whether it's a child, because I think you should definitely name a child if you have a child. I mean, that's obvious, right? Personally, I name everything. Like, you know, about a minute ago when I seemed to be very incoherent, I named that Sally Rand after the great fan dancer. I just named that Psy. Tom the Psy. Oh, there's another silence. Should I give it a name? Raphael. That was Raphael the Silence. Time quake. Oh my God, this is the funniest thing. When we were making Millennium, one of the most amusing stories that happened, which I did not put in the book, was, well, Cheryl had this console in front of her, and it was an acting console, and there were buttons on it that she could push to help her acting, and there was an act better button, and it got completely stuck during a very key scene. And there was just insanity on the set. The producer, the director, all the suits from LA were running around trying to fix this act better button. But of course, the real truth was I'd stuck gum in it, so it wouldn't work. I wasn't getting revenge. I just felt that after a week of working with someone, they should turn their heads towards you. They don't have to say hello, but their head should turn in your direction. Uta Hagen said that. Stanislavski said that. Demi Moore said that. All the great acting teachers have said that. So that's what happened. And it was fascinating because she was so confused when her acting better button was stuck that her line was supposed to be time quake. And Miss Cheryl Ladd started yelling out blonde quake. It was just hysterical. It really was. It was hysterical. Well, you see, that's the thing about my life, is that when you work with people of that caliber, you have a choice to stay mired in your own pit of averageness, or you can choose to climb up the peak to the top where the greats live. Because this is what I'm saying, is that on top of that peak where you have Bob Paris and you have Cheryl Ladd and you have Chastity Bono and all these people, all these greats, all these giants of Olympus, and they're all living up there, these mountains are all connected. Because what is a mountain? That's right, it's a triangle. It can be a pink triangle. With what? It's the letter A, because think about it. That must be what Bob Paris was saying to me. Mountains, A's. That's because what is a mountain? A mountain is an island in the sky, isn't it? That's all. So these mountains are connected to other mountains, and on top of these mountains, there are giants all over the world. But you're not a giant alone. This is what I would say to Bob Paris. Is Bob, do not fret. Do not think that you are alone. There is some empty-headed bodybuilder in Sri Lanka as we talk who is thinking of you. Do you know what I'm saying? Cheryl Ladd, there is a talentless actress in San Salvador who's got your number, and you're all connected. We're all connected. We aren't islands. We're islands in the stream. Dolly Parton, one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. That's it. A's. The letter A. Yeah. I've been repeating myself like Tinky Winky, haven't I? The Teletubby. You know Tinky Winky, the Teletubby, the purple Teletubby that carries the handbag and has the pink triangle but isn't gay? The Teletubbies will definitely make an appearance in my next book, because I've got to find those furry creatures.
So there's stories that aren't in the book.
Yes, in fact, there's an extended section of the book called Into the Heart of Darkness, which was my experiences in the Philippines in the early 80s, where I inadvertently foil Imelda Marcos's plan to rule the world with an army of bird girls. And it's common knowledge there. I mean, that hasn't crossed the Pacific, because the Philippines is 8,000 islands, and they're all connected, but they're not connected to us. This is the thing. All the rest of the islands are connected, but not those 8,000 islands in the Philippines. And this is a fascinating story, and I meet Imelda, and George Hamilton, of course, is there, and discover that she has been creating a race of bird girls. She steals peasant girls, and then she grafts wings onto them, and she's going to try to use them to rule the world. It's not just India and Pakistan with the bomb, is what I'm saying. There are other things that are going on in this world. For example, the leader of the Ivory Coast is creating an army of caterpillar boys. Yes, he is. He's taking young boys, he's stretching them, he's adding segments, he's giving them boring capabilities, and he's putting giant screws on the ends of their noses, and he's going to take these boys, and they're going to bore all around the world from islands all over the world, because we're all connected. And I tell you, you just mark my words, by the year 2000, millions of Ivory Coast boys with screws on their head are going to burst up from the center of Manhattan, and all hell will break loose. It's the mouse that roared all over again. That silence is called Santiago.
I think we have enough, buddy.
Oh, thank you. This has just been wonderful. It's been, you know what? This has been a good chance for me to air the cobwebs out. I've had a good mental airing.
Hello, I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The truth is rarely pure and never simple." That's why it's imperative that we stay informed. So pull up your ears. An excellent way to do this is by listening to Southern California's longest-running radio program for the gay and lesbian community, IMRU.
Welcome back. I'm Abby Dees.
I'm Wenzel Jones, and you're listening to IMRU Radio. It's growing season, and since I'm a grower, not a shower, it's time to talk tomatoes.
Oh, my Lord. Summertime, and the living is easy.
Yes, it's true. Summertime is actually here, and what does summer mean to everybody? Tomatoes. And so to talk tomatoes, we've called in Food Network star finalist chef Paul McCullough and producer, director, writer Jeremy Sanford to talk to us about the world of tomatoes. So welcome, gentlemen. You are the men who literally wrote the book on tomatoes.
We did.
We literally did.
We love our aromatherapy book.
And we should point out that's Roma starting with an R, as in Roma tomato. Now, summer has been here a long time at this point.
Oy.
When should the tomatoes have gone in?
Well, in LA, the season starts early. So mid-March is when you can get your tomatoes in the ground, as long as the plot that you picked for your tomatoes gets about 6 to 8 hours of sun a day.
Well, now, how big is your garden? Because you guys are a lot more serious than most people.
That's a personal question, how big my garden is.
And how does it grow, sir?
It grows. Lovely. We have a pretty large backyard with a beautiful avocado tree and an orange tree. And currently, we have 22 tomato plants in raised beds.
And how many varieties have you guys gone with?
Out of 24, I think I probably have 20 varieties and 4 repeats.
And what is your favorite?
What's your favorite, Jeremy? I always buy the Aussie.
The Roma. We actually have a couple of Romas this year. Paul has not had much success growing Roma tomatoes, but we have 2 that are actually thriving.
The irony.
The irony. Yes, after writing the book about them.
I've never been able to grow a Roma that didn't have the blossom end rot, didn't just look like this stunted version of something that I wished it could be. But this year, I have 2 San Marzanos, and they are looking amazing. I brought Jeremy out. I'm like, honey, look, I think the curse is lifted.
And those are expensive when you buy them in the
store, too.
So nicely done. Now, to get back to varieties, because a lot of people are afraid if they don't see a red tomato.
Right.
Like, I've read that they can't really sell yellow tomatoes in Europe because Europeans just don't cotton to them. What is the difference between varieties beyond the cosmetic? Because I know there are white ones that actually look like organs out there.
Mm.
Organs.
Like drunk kidneys or something. I mean, it looks like a plant uterus.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it looks like.
Well, originally they were yellow. I mean, the very first tomatoes were yellow. And that's where the Italian word pomodoro comes from, because it's a golden apple.
But is a difference in texture, in flavor? Is it just
everything?
Yeah, everything.
Texture, flavor, the water content, the thickness of the skin, the meatiness of the fruit inside. Some people say, oh, you should never just slice a Roma tomato and eat it on a sandwich. Well, actually, this year when I picked the ones that I've actually grown, they're absolutely delicious. And the green zebra stripes are a perfect example of a green tomato that, as it ripens up, you just think, is that ripe? Is that ripe? And then as it's ripening up, it gets a nice yellow sort of blush over the top of it. And the stripes just go really deep green to the bottom to this really pale green on top. And it's bright and acidic and just amazing and delicious. You can cut some of those and top it on a piece of halibut. And there's just so many varieties that we can grow here in California. The chocolate stripes and the little yellow pears and the beefsteaks and the Aussies, and they're ones that are shaped like peppers.
Now, what are the Aussies? Because I know you mentioned that that's one of your favorites.
Well, they're generally big and thick.
We're talking tomatoes, right?
We are.
Okay.
Because a tomato's a weed, and it wants to not stand up. It wants to sprawl all over your garden, just keep sending out tendrils, and just have as many tomatoes as possible.
One thing you'll notice the varieties of tomatoes is the thickness of the wall, and that's why Romas are a paste tomato, which is one of the sort of four main categories. And they have a much thicker wall, which is less seeds and more wall. And that's why they use those for tomato paste, tomato sauce, just because it's a much thicker media tomato.
Here's a question somebody asked me. The suckers, that little tiny shoot between the branch and the main stem, they said, make sure you take them off. And I always mean to, but then I run out of energy.
To pinch or not to pinch?
Exactly. What are your feelings, gentlemen?
I'm a no-pinch kind of guy. But I know some people like to do it, but I don't think you need to.
Are you staring at Paul with...
As I pinch him. I think you need to pinch a little bit because my raised bed only has so much space. And for example, this one plant that I have is really growing and it is like gangbusters. If I don't pinch off some of that growth, it's going to take over and shade my other plants. There's not going to be as much airflow, which is really important in your tomato garden. So I'd say pinch 50% of what you have.
Now, here's a to get precious. When people talk about grapes, they always like to talk about the terroir and the flavors it brings from the local soil into the fruit. Do tomatoes actually do that to a degree that you've noticed, or is that just beyond twee?
I think they do. You know, our friends up in Ojai have an amazing plot of land, and they have all the space they want to need, so they never pinch, and they have really hard clay soil. And so they're amending a lot. But the tomatoes, we both grew green zebra stripes. His green zebra stripes had a distinctly different flavor when we went and tasted than mine did, growing here in my backyard on Gardner Street and in my raised bed where I've amended the soil with compost and worm casings and cow poop and Miracle-Gro potting soil to give it as much as possible, because without it, I'm just sticking a tomato plant in my ground in the backyard is not a favorable condition for that plant. So,
what do you do to keep pests away short of spraying everything with malathion, which I assume we all don't think is a good thing?
And then Dr. Earth has a really great organic insect spray. But I think, you know, like roses like to be fussed over, I think your tomato plant likes to be handled a little bit. And check it out. If you see some small pests, you get some of that spray on there, pick off the big ones.
And it is a good idea to not to grow your tomatoes in the same area of your yard every year, because then the pest can get established there.
Okay, now there's undeniably nothing better than a fresh tomato from the garden with just a little sprinkling of salt. But what is your favorite simple thing to do that isn't quite that simple when you've got a warm tomato right in your hand?
And one of the easiest things to do is just, if you have Roma tomatoes, anything, cut them in half, little oil, salt, pepper, stick them in your oven and just roast them. And it really develops the flavor and they get super sweet and the flavor is amazing. So generally, tomatoes like to struggle a little bit. You don't want to overwater them because you can actually dilute the taste.
Anyway, because this is the Gay Agenda Show, we have selected for your edification a variety of tomatoes that you may find interesting. I found a tomato called Aunt Ruby's German Cherry, which sounds like a lesbian euphemism. This is a green cherry tomato. What did you find, Paul?
I found one called the White Queen.
Ooh.
She's a big round girl with a beautiful green top.
I ran across one that shares its name with the fourth book in the Armistead Maupin Tales of the City series. It's called Baby Cakes, and it's a red cherry with, and I quote, a natural salty flavor.
What about the Beefmaster?
What about the
Beefmaster? I mean, that just opens up a whole... I mean, everyone needs a good Beefmaster in their garden.
Beefmaster.
Beefmaster.
Jeremy?
And the Beefmaster is good friends with a pink pounder. you... and if you're lucky, you can grow both at the same time. Are you familiar with a pink pounder?
Is it large?
Oh, yes.
It's pink and it's large.
That's all you need. Well, I did run across one called Sappho.
Sappho?
Mm-hmm. It's a red cherry with a sweet acid flavor.
Hmm.
Sappho. Well, gentlemen, this has been a most satisfying little tour through the world of tomatoes. Thank you so much for coming out.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice to be here again.
Well, it's lovely to see you all again. So, for more information, people go to romatherapy.com and don't forget the hyphen between Roma and therapy. Also, paulskitchen.com to find out more about Mr. McCullough.
There you go. And if anyone is listening and would like to order the book as a special, extra special gift, we have this great aromatherapy magnet that we'll throw in there as well. And it's got all these measure equivalents and it's wonderful for baking. So,
why, I'm looking at one right now and I can't wait to put it up on my refrigerator when I get home. So thank you again for coming out, Paul McCullough and Jeremy Stanford. And this is Wenzel Jones for IMRU.
Midsummertime, summertime, 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 summertime. It's summertime.
And in case anybody's interested, this year I actually planted Aunt Ruby's German green tomatoes.
Just green tomatoes this year or other colors?
Oh, we have other colors. We have Lemon Boy and we have Early Girl and we have Celebrity, but those are all hybrids. Aunt Ruby's is an heirloom.
Oh, okay. Not that I care when I'm eating a salad. What's your favorite?
I like the Lemon Boy. It almost tastes like a peach. It's delicious.
Okay. Next year, Lemon Boy, it is for me.
Okay. That's it for tonight. Our thanks to IMRU's executive producer, Steve Pride, Rainbow Minute producers, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and our director of distribution, Vash Bodhi.
Find us online at imruradio.org and follow us on Facebook at IMRU Radio. If you're a web designer, social media expert, or just interested in LGBTQI community affairs and would like to volunteer with IMRU, email volunteer@imruradio.org.
A little reminder, you can always hear our weekly show posted to kpfk.org.
You can also listen to our podcast, where we'll start presenting longer interviews and content too bodacious to broadcast.
Bodacious. And if you want to see us, be sure to check out our promos on IMRU Radio Podcast on YouTube.
Good night.